And how about the Russian convoys? How many of those did you go on?
Well, I don't know the exact figure, but it was quite a regular thing. Like, you know, you went from Skapa to Iceland, Iceland to Murmansk and back. And we used to go on, we used to call the Denmark Strikes Patrol, which is on the north side of between Iceland and Greenland. And far from that, as I say, the Russian convoys, that was, and of course eventually D-Day, that's when we came down from our northern duties to come over to Normandy.
When you went on these Russian convoys, what time of year? Did you go both summer and winter?
Oh yes, you just went, you know. Yes.
What was the best time of year, if you could say?
I don't think there was a best time, but it all seemed the same, you know, just going over to Iceland, to a place called Seydisfjord, and sort of, because we used to be ahead of the convoy. And
what craft were you on then?
On a cruiser, the Belfast.
Yes.
And
so you would have been defending the convoy.
Oh yes, 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 yes. And we just used to take them to the convoy used to go to Murmansk, but the escort used to go to a place called Kola Inlet, which is just a little bit little distance away from Murmansk, and you just waited there and came back and brought the convoy back or another convoy back.
What were the proportion of losses on those convoys? Were many craft lost?
I couldn't tell you because, as I say, our role at this particular time was ahead of the convoy, more in the to sort of shelter the convoy or protect the convoy from surface craft, which did materialise in the shape of the Scharnhorst in December of 43. The rest of the convoy is escorted by the normal convoy escort, you know, destroyers and corvettes or whatever. But the main cruiser escort used to be a good while ahead of the main convoy for that purpose.
So what do you remember about the Scharnhorst incident?
Well, there was a...
Could you describe too long, as much as you can?
2 long days. It started off on day before Boxing Day. Chase across the North Sea there, and then eventual engagement, and finishing up late in the night, about might have been 11 or 12 o'clock at night, when the last we saw her, when she was completely on fire, and then tearing around picking up survivors. Well, we didn't pick any up, but the destroyers were, and then going back to Kola Inlet.
Was that a boost for morale?
I think at that time anything like that would have been a boost to morale, you know, to win something like that, you know.
Had it been particularly threatening to Allied shipping, the Scharnhorst?
Yes, there's always been a possible threat to the Russian convoys, not only just the Scharnhorst, but the Tirpitz, which were holed up in Norway, and they're always a threat to the northern routes, and we'd always expected them to come out. I think some of the senior officers hoped they'd come out so they get their medals and so forth, you know. But they've always been a threat, yeah.
How about people's attitudes towards the Russian convoys? You know, obviously, would you say it was a hazardous?
Yeah, it was a monotonous job, because you just ploughed your way across, you know, say a fortnight, 10 days, to Kola, and then plough your way back again, and then at the end of that, you only had to look forward to a scrap of flour, and which anybody who's been there will tell you it's one of the worst places that God ever created, I think.
And how about the conditions on the Russian convoys? Was it very cold?
Cold, and for the most part of it, you would be sort of watch and watch about on, you know, in your armament, you know, so that you would be, and constantly there'd be alarms of, you know, aircraft or surface, which not always materialised, and so you was all kept on the hop all the time, like, you know.
And did the cold weather cause any particular problems?
Well, it was, we used to get issue with especially warm clothing and all that, but it was the cold was prevalent all the time. Like, you know, most of the time you were just on the run. Like.
But how about things like guns icing up? And
yes, used to get all that sort of thing, yeah.
Was that, did yeah. it make life more difficult?
Well, you had to go and get it off, like, you know, somewhere at home I got a fork after chipping off ice. As I say, just the monotony of it, so. And, you know, having to sort of be on your mounting and then go down, have something to eat and come back up on the mounting and sort of that all the time.
If people were shipwrecked in the very cold conditions, did it make your chances of survival much
very
less?
Little. Very, very little.
How much did you sort of give yourself? Have you any idea?
Well, they did a statistic, I think it was about 4 minutes, I think, in the actual round North Cape there. The chance of survival once you got in the water were nil, more or less. I think that was proven by the survivors from the Shannos. I think it was about 15, I think, out of the whole complement, which must be somewhere in the region of about over 1,000 or so. So that explains it, I think.
Did you ever see the Russians? Did you ever meet them?
Yeah, we saw them and we did have a little bit of contact with them, not a lot, you know, and an exchange of cigarettes and bread and things like that, but not a great contact, no.
Where would this have taken place?
At Kola. But as I say, Kola Inlet was only as was called Kola Inlet, and that's about it. There was not a great population or something like that there.
But were you allowed on shore?
No. Well, we were allowed on shore, yeah, but very few of us went, like, because there was nothing there to go for, really.
Did you invite Russians on the ship?
No. The only contact we had is by, supplying us with water or fuel or anything like that. That was the only contact. Not socially, if you get what I mean.
Did you get the feeling that this was restricted on their part, that they didn't welcome contact, or
no? I don't think so. I think it was just the prevailing conditions. You know, the situation as it was. You know, there was no question of that at all. I think we had one incident. Is that the Russian general, whoever was in charge of the area, gave us a reindeer as a present, which we nicknamed Bambi at the time, because the film, I think, was what I had been about. But, you know, that's just an incident or so. Nothing other than that.
But were your relations friendly, would you say?
Well, to what I saw on the, you know, in my own way, yeah, you know, not in any way hostile or anything like that, no.
Do you think they appreciated what you were doing, taking these supplies up there? Was there any sense of...
I suppose they did, you know. It must have done, I suppose, because it was helping them, I suppose. I think so, yeah.
And how about D-Day? What did you actually do for D-Day?
Well, we went over there with the main assault on the 6th. It was a bombarding cruiser. We laid off Arromanche. And supported, I think it was a Canadian division ashore. And at first it was very quiet, you know, but apart from the initial assault, things settled down quite sort of nicely at first. We just carried on bombarding the, as required, the shore people. And we was there till about early August, because we was the flagship of the cruiser squadron. And as I say, later on in our stay there, we had a bit of clashes with the shore batteries and that, but by and large, you know, it was just a question of being there and bombarding, and that's it.
What did you think of the initial sort of assault of D-Day? Was it well organised?
Oh, yes, an experience that from, if you looked across from the Isle of Wight into the Channel, you could have walked across on ships and landing crafts and all sorts of floating armada, as you might call it, going across to the beaches the following morning. Well, we arrived about the early hours of the morning, about 2 o'clock in the morning, something like that.
And was much of this shipping destroyed by the enemy in the early stages?
I don't think so, no. I think, you know, they're mostly in the way of landing crafts and that, and I suppose I don't think there was much in the way of distraction as such, but I think what I've heard, that we were lucky in our landing, that it wasn't as bad as other sectors of the Normandy beaches.
How quickly were these harbours set up, the Mulberry harbours?
The Mulberry, well, I think that took place over a question of a couple of weeks after the initial landing, when they brought the Mulberry over and they sank some of the old merchant ships to make a breakwater and that sort of thing, you know. Say within probably a week, 10 days after the initial landing, I think.
And what happened to you after that? Did you just stay around that piece of coast?
We stayed there at Arromanche most of the time, as I say, bombarding, and apart from the break into Portsmouth for re-ammunitioning and storing and going back again, we stayed there, as I say, from the initial landings till about the second week in August, I think, first, second week in August, when we came back to England for good. We went back to our beautiful Scapa Flow.
When you look back on your evacuation, do you think there were any long-term effects on your life because you were evacuated to Britain?
I think from a personal point of view, yes. I think it made a great difference to me. And as I say, in the fact that through joining the Navy and all that, it changed my whole sort of outlook on life, I think. Which you wouldn't have done, I think, if I stayed on the rock, you know, and no war or nothing like that. Yes, I think it would have done.
After the war, had you any thoughts of returning to Gibraltar?
Well, I didn't have any option, because I was in the Navy for, as I say, when I joined the Navy, I joined for 12 years. That's not including the time as a boy, because that doesn't count. So in actual fact, I served 15. So in 1944, when most of the evacuees went back to the rock, I couldn't go with him because I wasn't here. I was already somewhere else. I was on my way out the Far East then, so there was no question of me going back at all.
Have you ever been back since?
Oh, yes, yes. As I say, I've been back, went back in 1947 and 48, 52, 54. Yes, I've been back occasionally, yes. Big change as well, great changes.
Do you think it was really sensible to evacuate the civilian population of Gibraltar during
well,
the war?
It's hard to assess that, really, because from the point of view of the government, or the British government at the time, yes, I suppose it was to in their point of view, because of the, as I said before, the danger of Spain coming into the war and having to keep a civilian population on the rock and feed them and everything else. From hindsight now, and looking at it now, no, I don't think there was any sense in it. But then, of course, we didn't know those things then. But I think they could have took us somewhere a bit more safe, I suppose, but that's the way things are. I suppose things turned out.